Democrats and Republicans have traditionally supported these kinds of tax cuts. Independent economists from across the political spectrum have said this proposal is one of the best ways to boost our economy and spur hiring.
President Obama, in what is shaping up to be the first little battle in the post-supercommittee world, extending a payroll tax into 2012. They were just talking about it on the news. Now that the committee has failed to come up with a big truce that would have included that payroll tax cut extension, J. Newton Small, Time Magazine congressional correspondent, joins us to debrief the super failure and to help us understand what happens next, and also to understand Congress's dismal, almost headed for negative numbers approval rating. Hi, Jay. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
And I actually want to get into this approval thing, first of all. It was, you know, very easy to find members of Congress dissing Congress in the last few days after the super committee failed to come up with a deficit agreement. Here, for example, is Senator John Kerry on CNN yesterday.
I think people are upset. I think everybody in the country is upset. They're looking at Congress and saying, why can't these guys get something done? But it's not enough for people just to say, oh, it's broken. You got to ask, okay, why? What is the matter that it is broken?
Now, on the other hand, I don't know if you saw ABC this week on Sunday, Jay, but in their political roundtable, the commentator George Will actually saw Congress as doing exactly what it's supposed to do. Listen.
This is a transaction cost of democracy. It's untidy, of course it is. That's supposed to be that way. The Congress, far from being dysfunctional, is functioning as a representative institution representing a country that is of two minds.
Representative institution representing a country that is of two minds. Jay, as a congressional correspondent, have you given that minority point of view that he would be in the 9%? any consideration?
I actually tend to agree with George Will in the sense of people who watch Congress for a long time would argue that Congress is never really an institution that was built to move quickly. It was never built to do big sweeping kind of changes. And already in the last 2 years, it's had one of the most productive legislative sessions since LBJ. To swing back so quickly to the other extreme and be able to do that is very out of the norm for Congress. And so to that degree, I agree with George Will. That said, this is also a symptom of Congress, you know, being increasingly broken because there's, you know, the primary system, the system of closed primaries creates candidates that are increasingly polarized, increasingly ideological, less interested in sort of working across the aisle and crafting compromises. You get these sort of massive failures that Congress, you know, cannot come to an agreement, and really the perfect is the enemy of the good.
And I heard somebody else say, it might have even been George Will again, but I think it was somebody else, say, well, the Congress is polarized because the country is polarized. The nation is as ideological as the Congress that's debating, you know, on the floor of the House and the floor of the Senate. I'm not sure that's true, but do you think that the Congress being as polarized as it is just simply represents, you know, a Fox News, MSNBC electorate that's that polarized?
No, I think there is a very much silent majority that just isn't represented here because they frankly don't show up and vote in primaries. And so you get sort of 25-30% of the country that thinks that Sarah Palin walks on water and Barack Obama is the devil, and those are the people that show up in Republican primaries. And then you get 25% of the people that think Barack Obama is, you know, walks on water and Sarah Palin is the devil, and those are the people that show up in Democratic primaries. But it's that center that generally swings the general election, which is why general election candidates move to the center, you know, in the general election to appeal to these independent and moderate voters that really swing, you know, the main elections. But the problem is that the primary process is increasingly polarized, and so your choice is increasingly stark and outside of the center and sort of to the two extremes.
So I thought it might be interesting for a few minutes to take calls from people in the 9%. Jay, for some reason, the nines have it in our political discourse these days, whether it's Herman Cain with his 999 plan or the other 99% in Occupy Wall Street. Well, today it's the other 9%. Those of you who think Congress is doing a good job, those of you who agree with George Will and to some degree our guest, J. Newton Small, congressional correspondent for Time magazine, those of you who look at the failure of the super committee and say, well, not fun, but this is the way it's supposed to work. They did their job. If you're in that other 9%, give us a call, and we're going to give you voice for a few minutes here. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post it to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And, Jay, when you look at the 9% approval rating for Congress in that New York Times poll, which is not new to the failure of the super committee, that actually came out last month, but Huffington Post and The Fix on Washington Post and the Senator Michael Bennett did some really funny comparisons. I don't know if you've seen these, but all right, Congress is at 9%. A recent Gallup poll, Huffington Post points out, found that 11% of people found polygamy morally acceptable. Additionally, 30% of Americans expressed approval of pornography, so Congress is less popular than porn. And the Michael Bennett list compared Congress's approval rating to the U.S. going communist, which received an 11% approval rating. I don't know in which survey that was. Banks netted 23%, and the BP oil spill was approved of by 16%, according to the Michael Bennett list. So Congress is less popular than the BP oil spill.
Well, that's pretty funny. I mean, you can always do those kinds of fun comparisons, and it is incredibly unpopular, and it's sort of something that everybody loves to hate. But at the same time, you know, the legislative process was never meant to be so scrutinized. I think in this current age of sort of 24/7 media, it is really not friendly to the institution of Congress, because Congress, you know, as I think Teddy Roosevelt famously said, it's like watching sausages be made. You just don't want to know how it's done because it's really, really ugly.
Randall in Astoria on the psychology of poll results. Hi, Randall.
Yeah, I was just wondering if the question maybe is the wrong one to ask. We're talking about Congress as if it's some single individual entity, but it's really a wide spread of multiple personalities. You can't ask, well, do you approve of Congress in the same way you ask, do you approve of President Obama?
It's really a great point. And, Jay, we know that in other things, like, do you approve of doctors in general? People will say, no, not really. Do you approve of your doctor? Oh, yeah, my doctor's great. And the same thing goes with teachers, and the same thing goes with members of Congress. People like their member of Congress, more or less. And so Randall makes an important point, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think there's anyone in Congress who's an incumbent right now who's polling at 9%. And if they are, then they're in a lot of trouble because they're not going to get reelected. I think most people sort of tend to poll much like Barack Obama. You know, if they're having a bad year, they're at 40%. If they're having a good year, they're somewhere between 50 and 60%. So, yeah, people do love their individual members.
Daniel in Connecticut with a little love for Congress. Hi, Daniel. You're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. What are you thinking?
So first of all, that was as these polls have been coming out, I've been thinking the same point. Asking people if they like Congress, you're not going to get an accurate depiction of the country's opinion. You'd much rather take an average of people's approval ratings and probably get a much higher and more accurate opinion. That's the first thing. The second thing is the fact that so little people approve of Congress and Congress is doing nothing, the country's just in a crappy mood. Congress is doing exactly what the country wants it to do. The country is sluggish, it's slow, and so is Congress being the same way. The country is indecisive, and so is Congress. So in that sense, I agree with them. I mean, do I agree with all their policies? Not necessarily, but I don't think that as an institution it's working wrong or bad.
Thank you very much. Leslie in the Bronx, more love for Congress, Leslie?
You know, I love this country, and I love Congress. I think that we have a lot of people in there, i.e. Republicans, that are just out for themselves. And it's the people that aren't engaging Congress to vote them out, and so the Democrats can do what they were supposed to do 2 years ago or four years ago. I mean, that's it. I think Congress is great. I think it's the people that are responsible, and that's why the Republicans are trying to suppress voting, because they will come out and they will vote these people out that are doing what's good for them in their pocket.
Thank you very much, Leslie. So do you think, Jay Newton Small, congressional correspondent for Time magazine, that this low approval rating for Congress means low approval rating for the Republicans, because the Republicans are calling the shots in Congress by and large, and that portends badly for them in the 2012 elections?
Well, certainly, when you look at CNN had a poll out yesterday where I believe Republicans, you know, you were asked I guess voters were asked whether they approved of the job that Republicans were doing in Congress, particularly having to do with the debt ceiling and the super committee, and only about 20% of voters approved of the job Republicans were doing, and a huge number, I think, something like 70% disapproved. And then they asked the same question for Democrats, do you approve or disapprove? And it was slightly better. It was sort of 34% versus 60% disapprove. So, I mean, in that sense, Republicans are, to a larger degree, getting blamed for the logjam that's in Congress right now. And I think even if it isn't really their fault, the sort of demise of the supercommittee fully, I mean, it's one, they're one of several groups that are responsible for this. It's just that they've created such an image for themselves in the last year of the group that's really out there sort of opposing things, trying to, you know, bring down a lot of legislation, that they've sort of become this symbol of logjam in Congress, of sort of, you know, really blocking things. And that has, I think, hurt them.
Rosie in Mount Kisco, you're part of the 9%?
I am, by default, though. I was actually hoping that the super committee wouldn't come to an agreement, which I know sounds awful and is so far from what I would normally think, but it just, for one party to go into it signing this Grover Norquist thing, saying no taxes, no nothing, I said the only way they'll come to a deal is if the Democrats cave, which is what they've been doing for the last 2 or 3 years. And it's pushing me farther and farther and farther to the left, where now I want to be one of the crazy lefties who are adamant and stance. And I always said there's room for compromise, there's room for compromise, but not when it's one party doing all the compromise on one side. So I was thrilled that the Democrats finally didn't give in. And I know that's terrible, and it's a terrible place to be for our country, but that's what it's forcing me to.
Rosie, thank you. Do you think that's an accurate depiction? Now, we know that the Republicans have been digging in on no additional taxes, and, you know, President Norquist has been in charge of many of them by getting them to sign the pledge. 60 Minutes did an interesting job of profiling Norquist and his power as a lobbyist to get Congress to the Republicans in Congress to dig in almost so uniformly on no additional taxes position. But, Jay, the Republican position officially has been that, no, they did put new revenues on the table with the Senator Pat Toomey plan, that they would have had about a quarter of the deficit reduction come from new revenues. It just would have come from new revenues in a way that the Democrats didn't want to go for, lowering the rates in general but closing the loopholes.
Exactly. I mean, I think Republicans have smartly read the tea leaves on the wall, which basically said, I mean, almost every poll out there for the last year has said that a majority, vast majority of Americans support a combination of increased revenue as well as cutting spending in order to resolve the deficit. And so by refusing to look at one piece of it, they were very much boxing themselves in and seeming incredibly recalcitrant, and they were getting blamed for that. So smartly, they came up with this plan, as you said, authored by Pennsylvania Senator Pat Toomey, who's a former head of the anti-tax group Club for Growth, and where he came up with $300 billion of new revenue, matched with lowering all of the top tax rates from 35% to 28%. Now, Democrats basically said, look, you know, first of all, we don't like how you're doing this because it would require things like opening up ANWR, you know, the sort of Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, to drilling and counting those fees as revenues, you know, at which they are adamantly opposed to, you know, things like that. And then offsetting it, and that would only bring in about $300 billion, but lowering the rates would create a new hole of $3.3 trillion over 10 years. And it was like taking a sort of cork and trying to stop up a fire hydrant. It was just, it didn't make any sense. And the plan, you know, just was sort of DOA, and Democrats called it sort of political theater. And even Grover Norquist called it political theater, saying it was just a sop to, you know, for the voters, and that was it, and that they would never actually do this.
Jay Newton Small, congressional correspondent for Time, as we debrief the failure of the super committee. You were part of our West Wing video club on our politics website, itsafreecountry.org, and some of you listening maybe saw the West Wing clip that we posted and read what Jay wrote and what I wrote and what John Hockenberry from The Takeaway wrote about this West Wing episode, in which there was a similar but fictional budget super committee negotiating behind closed doors. And we chose this particular clip because of the secrecy issue. And there was a secrecy issue in the Real Life Super Committee, which some people had objected to. Jay, you took the position that in real life the secrecy is good because the glare of television lights helps make compromise harder. I want to play a little bit of the clip and then have a little bit of that conversation. So if you know the West Wing, this is the advisor to the president, Toby Ziegler, supporting the idea of closed door or secret committees to negotiate complicated budget deals.
Because you can't solve Social Security and ask people to run for election at the same time. So why not give politicians some cloud cover and let them be lawmakers for a while? 15 people in a room with the door closed, 7 Democrats, 7 Republicans, and the President of the United States who will not have a vote, and they walk out of that room, and with one voice they make a recommendation to Congress and the American people. And nobody knows who is where. The only way it's going to happen is in secret.
J. Newton Small, the only way it was going to happen was in secret. Well, they did this sort of in secret, and it didn't happen anyway.
That's true. I mean, to be fair, this was always sort of, I think, to be a little bit doomed from the get-go, only because, as I wrote yesterday on our blog on Swampland, there was just so much political weight against it. I mean, incumbents really didn't want to go into this campaign year having voted to, if you're a Republican, raise taxes, if you're a Democrat, cut, you know, entitlement benefits. That's just sort of killer going into, you know, going into an election. And even sort of the candidates didn't want it to have happen because they want to run against a dysfunctional Congress. I mean, there's, you know, everyone from the leaders down, there really was nobody on the side of getting this done. But I do think that in general, it is important to have, you know, and it's sort of a weird thing as a journalist to say this because, you know, I obviously want to know what's going on inside the room. I want to write about it. I want to hear, you know, the secrets. I want to see how the sausage was made and let you know how that happened. But I think it's also at the same time, you know, as much as I love C-SPAN and I think it's great that we have that transparency, it has had the sort of unintentional effect of taking all real debate off of the floors of the House and Senate, or even in the committees, because the minute a member shows a vulnerability of a position, or, you know, and it's caught on camera, that becomes a campaign commercial. That becomes something that gets hammered for the other side. And so you can't really ever give your true opinion because you're always on camera and you're never going to be able to back down from that. So you need to be sort of in a room where there aren't cameras, where you can honestly say, well, here's where I'm willing to give. Here's the sort of skin that I'm willing to show. Here's a little bit of skin, you know, skin in the game. And here's where I'm not willing to give, and not get sort of taken to the cleaners by your opponents with campaign commercials.
That is so sad, Jay, and something that most Americans probably have not thought at all about, that C-SPAN may actually be contributing to the lockdown polarization in Congress. This is not, you know, some supercharged cable TV talk show. It's C-SPAN. It's just showing the American people the floor of Congress, unfiltered, unedited, just raw, live video verite. And you're saying that C-SPAN has forced real discussion more behind closed doors than it ever was on the floor of Congress.
I think so, yeah. I mean, look, once upon a time, members used to actually go and sit and listen to the debates and hash things out and say, well, that's interesting. You've persuaded me. Maybe here I might be willing to, let's say, give up this bridge that I was going to get built and give that money to you to reduce the deficit or whatever it is that you might do. And I mean, nowadays, if you did that, his or her constituents might get really mad that you're giving away the bridge, or your opponent might say, you know, run a commercial saying, using that phrase and saying, look, he cares more about, I mean, whatever it is that he gave up the money for, than this bridge, which is much needed in our community. I mean, it's just really like those kinds of negotiations where you're willing to give something up that it goes against your own self-interest is the hardest kind of negotiation, and one that really cannot be done in front of cameras.
Jay Newton Small, congressional correspondent for Time Magazine. We leave it on that depressing note, unfortunately, and obviously a lot more to come in the post-Super Committee world. Jay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
Now, listeners, tonight at 8 o'clock, candidates for the GOP presidential nomination gather in Washington for a debate on foreign policy, and you can gather with your fellow WNYC politics junkies at our politics website, itsafreecountry.org, for a live online chat. While you're there, by the way, you can look at our West Wing video clip and read the posts from J. Newton Small and John Hockenberry and me in the West Wing Video Club on the secrecy of budget super committees. All you need is a computer and a love of politics for either, for the live debate chat, watch the debate, and share your thoughts in real time. It starts tonight at 8 at itsafreecountry.org alongside the Republican presidential debate. And coming up in just a minute, we'll get the latest from Cairo, where there is such serious trouble in the streets. Does it threaten the historic first post-Mubarak election, which is scheduled for Monday? Stay with us.